Final hour of the show. Nate Goodyear with you. Dave and Katie in New Orleans getting some scheduled rest. It's a stretch, home stretch of the season. We got to have them ready for the playoffs. So it's just me and Matt George with you. Thanks to Justin Kutcher of Fox Sports for jumping in on some college basketball in the last segment. We're going to be speaking with Jason Jones here shortly because for the first 2 hours of the show, we've managed to largely avoid talking about the Kings taking on DeMarcus Cousins in New Orleans this evening. I mean, let's not pretend it's not a big deal to see the old fellow. This is the war of the worlds happening. This is the Kings fan civil war that's happening tonight in New Orleans. Make no mistake about that. It doesn't, like, this has become so much bigger than whether or not you like DeMarcus Cousins as a player. This has become this ridiculous, it almost like branches into mirroring politics, the way that people have dug in their sides on this. And that is why Jason Jones of the Sacramento Bee is kind enough to help keep me afloat here for at least next 10 to 15 minutes or so. Hey, Jason, it's just me today. Everyone bailed, man, so I appreciate you being my pal.
No problem. I guess no one, I know those guys don't really like me, so I mean, I'm not surprised.
Well, it's something about a trip to New Orleans, too, makes everyone disappear. I'm not sure what it is. You're the only one that's, that's got the perseverance to stick with it.
Yeah, see, I've done this long enough to I know how to hit Bourbon Street and all that and still get up in the morning and get my life right. So.
I mean, you know, I don't want to get after Katie at all because, I mean, I know she knows how to do her thing. She's burning the candle at both ends. And Dave's been to New Orleans plenty of times, but I still feel, Jason, like if he actually wanted to dial it up, he's still an amateur when it comes to that.
Well, I was just out here for All-Star, so, I mean, it's like this one here is like New Orleans light for me. I'm like, okay, this is nuts. I mean, you have All-Star and Mardi Gras at the same time. I think I burnt the candle on both ends and then got a new candle and burned another one while I was out here last time.
You're buying candles in bulk at Costco, man. So, and that's, I would imagine, yeah, a little bit different than game 74 or whatever the heck it is, but there's obviously plenty of storylines here. DeMarcus playing coy yesterday, starting the petty wars early on. I mean, he did kind of backtrack and say he's going to miss some, he missed some of the guys and he's looking forward to seeing some of them. But this is not going to be a smiley cotton candy experience for DeMarcus, is it?
No, and, you know, and he does miss the guys. I know I've talked to some of the guys. I mean, you talked to Matt. They've got to have a group chat that they're all still in together, you know, Matt, Rudy, Garrett, some of the guys. So he definitely does miss his guys. I know Matt told me last week he still misses the guys. I mean, DeMarcus's issue was with everyone upstairs. It has nothing to do with the guys on the court. The coach, he loved the coaching staff. He loved the support guys around there. It's a management thing with him. So, yeah, once he gets on the court, he's going to try to run through all those guys pretty much.
Well, and I'm not trying to – I mean, there's obviously two sides to this trade. There's the, hey, there was a cloud over the franchise that's been lifted – and then there's also the, dude, you trade away your best player for peanuts type of side of it. I'm not trying to bait you into, hey, his teammates actually didn't like him. They're lying. But just out of curiosity, there's been no secret that there has been tension behind the scenes in that locker room. Who's to blame for it has been the continual sticking point. And you heard that there was tension between him and Isaiah, and Isaiah has since then kind of done the same thing, like, I miss my guy, whatever. And I just wonder, I know that there was a relationship there and that those guys did get along, but is there also a factor of absence makes the heart grow fonder a little bit?
A little, but the thing is, too, if they go back to Isaiah, people forget, those guys were young. I mean, you weren't talking about guys who were at the time who were, 27 years old. You know, these guys were young and they were losing. And, you know, when you're young, you're losing. Ego gets involved. And to me, that's where you need to have strong management to step in. And, you know, say if those guys, I know there was frustration. You know, they thought Isaiah should pass the ball more. Isaiah thought, well, if you guys aren't going to get up there with me, I'm going to do what I got to do to try to get up to the team win. And to me, you know, what you needed was you needed someone who would step in and say, you know what, guys, you're all talented and you're all good. You're all not happy. But here's what's not going to happen. We're not going to start shipping guys out because you guys aren't happy. Because I've said more than once, probably more privately than publicly, if you win 28 games, why does any player on that team have a right to say anything about personnel?
Yeah.
You know, why are you listening to anybody on a 28-win team about what should be done? So, I mean, there was definitely tension, but, you know, especially in DeMarcus's younger days, but that had started to shift, especially these last couple of years. I know things with the referees and everything this year. This year was like it started a little last year, but this year was the first, I mean, it was definitive. Guys would come to me unsolicited and defend him and say, he's really not doing this stuff. You know, he's not earning all these texts. He's getting a lot of reputation stuff now. So I know people will say, well, you know, everyone's so happy to see him gone. I mean, not this year. I mean, this year, these guys were – this was a tight group really the last couple of years. I think last year had a lot to do with all of us against George Karl. But, I mean, these guys were really – you know, these last couple of years, the narrative of him being the worst teammate ever had really shifted, and it was becoming more – he was learning how to talk to guys, how to be better with those guys. And I would ask those guys, I'm like, seriously, is he better? And they'd be like, yeah, he is better. Obviously, he may not be, you know, the quintessential smiley face type leader, but you know, that's not everyone's personality.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, as Jason Jones of the Bee joins us on KHTK, I mean, do you think at some point, because this also was a major sticking point, that maturity would, after 6.5 years, eventually evolve into the death of what was called the DeMarcus Cousins tax? Those, you know, 7 to 10% of plays every night that he costs you buckets because he's barking at an official or getting down the floor a little too slow or just preoccupied with whatever's going on. I mean, it was such a slow burn to get to the maturity of knowing how to talk to teammates and stuff. Do you think that that was on the horizon?
I think that it was. I think, leading up to the trade, you were starting to see it. I mean, people get on me and say, well, they pass the ball more and the ball moves better. It's like, this is basketball, folks. When you have an all-star player, he should touch the ball more than everyone else. basketball is not sports is not this is not Little League. You don't say, well, okay, you know.
Everyone gets their turn.
It's his turn now. No, you have a guy getting you 28 and 11. He's supposed to touch the ball more than most people. And you look at that stretch going into the break, you know, pretty much from the time Rudy got hurt, he was leading the team in assists. You know, these guys were buying in. And that's why you've talked to a lot of these vets. That's kind of why they felt so burned by the deal. It wasn't just DeMarcus who felt burned. Those guys felt like they put in a lot of work to try to, you know, change the reputation of the franchise and make it to where a playoff berth wasn't a laughing matter. And they knew back in October when they said playoffs, everyone laughed at them. And they go into the break thinking, hey, we're 1.5 out. We played Denver 3 times. We've got a pretty favorable schedule, and we're starting to click. We're going to get in. And so when those other guys, when they all saw the trade, they all kind of thinking, gosh, you're giving up on us too. So it's been a very interesting just kind of the way the dynamic of the team shifted, because I think for a good while, there was kind of a why did they do this to all of us feeling. And it wasn't just DeMarcus. All those guys kind of felt that thing too, because they felt like they'd worked too hard to get the Kings in a position where, for the first time since I've covered them, where going into the break, the playoffs weren't a joke. And then they, you know, they get there and they all come back from the break with a whole, you know, entirely new team.
Yeah, it's got to be frustrating. I mean, are we trying to win games or not? We've given our best this season, and now you're going to dump our best player. And then, okay, I want to ask you too, this Sam Hinkie thing, and without getting into the rights or wrongs of whatever's done, I mean, I just, okay, put a lot of this stuff aside. There was an idea floated out there, though, that the Kings have done such deep damage to their reputation over the last few years with guys that have come through here and left with nothing but awful things to say about the way the franchise is run, that has gone so deep that they couldn't even convince an abject failure like Sam Hinkie to take a spot in their front office. And I don't know if that's true or not. But, I mean, is it really that bad, their reputation with guys around the league? We don't want anything to do with that, man. And how far do you have to go to repair something like that?
Oh, the reputation thing is true. I know people try to convince you, no, we're changing it. But just look at the last, say, 4 years. People forget Michael Malone situation. Michael Malone is very respected around the league, especially by a lot of players. You know, everywhere he's been, guys love him. You know, you look how Michael Malone got treated. You see how, even amongst coaches, how Tyrone Corbin got treated. One day, he coached the rest of the season. Less than a month later, he's on the way out the door, you know, and they're interviewing George, right, you know, while Corbin's coaching games. You know, a lot of people don't like a lot of fans still don't like Pete DeLisandro for the Isaiah situation, but even the way Pete DeLisandro was done was wrong. He's got a job, he's the GM, and then Vlade shows up and, like, Vlade's his boss. And it's like, well, hold up, what's going on here? I mean, how the DeMarcus thing happened, you know, it's just, you know, even the fact they can't even get top prospects to work out for them in the draft. I've had agents tell me they want their players to have no part of Sacramento. They just see the place of dysfunction where their players will not get better. So they've got a lot of work to do, and part of it really does go back to a lot of people around the league respect the front office, the structure of it. They feel like they put an amateur in Vlade in charge of it, and there's really no way to get around that. I know Vlade is working hard trying to, you know, right things, but you can't get over the way the things have gone the last few years. You know, even the way, even as unpopular as George was, the way George got treated at times wasn't cool. I mean, you know, you're telling people he's going to get fired. You've got the man sitting around thinking he's about to get fired. Oh, by the way, we're not firing you. But what we will do is we'll fire one of your assistants and tell you to go find someone else to replace him. I mean, the things that have happened the last few years just don't happen in NBA teams. So they do have a lot of work, and only time and kind of just showing they can run this thing like a professional franchise are going to fix that.
That's the thing that always got me when you brought up George Karl there. There is more than enough blame to go on his side of it. I mean, that's all been well documented on both sides. George Karl was not at his best in Sacramento, but it always baffled me, Jason, that he would end up being the guy taking the blame, not just from the franchise, but how many fans would get on the side of, dude, here you've got a guy that, what is he right now? Fourth all-time in wins? Is he that high? He's top five or something like that. You've got an unquestionably Hall of Fame NBA coach, and you're just going to pretend that he's peanuts because he couldn't succeed here? At some point, you got to look in the mirror.
And the thing is, like I said, me and George bump heads every now and then, and I know how the players felt about George. Mm-hmm. But George knows basketball.
Yeah.
And so to treat him like he was the village idiot was just, you know, those last few games, George was on the plane. He doesn't even know the guys who are arresting aren't even coming on the trip. I mean, to treat him like that, even given all the problems, just wasn't right. And that stuff resonates around the league. You know, George has a lot of friends. So if you're looking at trying to hire a coach, you know, those guys will talk to George and say, what was your experience? And I know George has got a lot to say about the team. So, George, you know, Corbin, and I'm trying to stick to just the Vivek era, you know, just the last few guys.
Right.
We could, you know, obviously go further back. But just under this current ownership, there's been a lot of stuff, I mean, to where if you're a guy looking for a job, you say to yourself, okay, do I have another option? Okay, I've got another option. I'm not going to Sacramento. I mean, even when it comes to the front office thing to help Vlade, a lot of guys who talked to the Kings felt like, why would I come there and work for a guy who I'm more qualified than?
Yeah. And, I mean, do we even know, because they hired Ken Catanella, and one of the things that kind of came out in that hinky speculation was that nobody seems to be real clear on what Ken Catanella does, or at least how much of his counsel Vlade is actually taking into consideration. Can you shed any light on that?
Yeah, well, Ken's pretty well respected around the league and seen as one of those guys who could be, you know, a star type guy in the front office. What it is that you look at the way they're set up, Ken's the one, like, front office type guy in the front office. And he really, you know, I know he's handled the big, you know, he's got a big part in negotiations. You know, he knows the CBA. He helps him all in those areas. But when it comes to making the decision, he's not the decision maker. So, like any other business, hey, Ken can have a great idea, but if the boss doesn't want to go along with it, it doesn't really matter. And all the guys who have been through this team in the last year, they all say the same thing. Once they leave, they all say it goes back to Vivek. That, you know, Vivek can be very impulsive, change his mind really quick, and then when he changes his mind, he wants it done then. Sure. And so it really goes back to, I mean, I think it could be Ken Catanella, it could be, you know, David Morway, Sam Hinkie, whoever. Until you get the ownership part component down to where everyone has belief that there's a plan from up top, you're going to have this type of stuff every year. You know, DeMarcus would be going, there's no more DeMarcus to blame. Say things go bad with Dave. Say Dave, I'm not saying Dave's about to get fired. Let's be clear. But I'm saying a couple of years, Dave's gone for whatever reason.
Right.
How many times can you replace coaches, players, and keep blaming everyone else?
Would you say, given all the circumstances, that they were lucky to get Dave Yeager?
Yeah, I mean, that kind of just fell to that kind of just fell perfectly for them in the fact that Memphis wanted to get rid of him and they had an opening. And it also helps that, you know, Dave's agent is the same agent as George. So he's just kind of, you know, it's just so, I mean, they definitely knew what was coming down the pipeline. So, I mean, that all kind of helped and it fell right for him. And they gave Dave a nice raise for what he made in Memphis. But again, you know, it's all going to come down to, because even with this, the team that Yeager and his staff came in, the coach is a lot different now. So as Dave keeps saying, this is really year zero. A lot of that progress they made from October to February, you almost have to erase that because you have to start all over. So, in essence, in a lot of ways, Dave is going into next season, really, in a lot of ways, year one. But, you know, and where it has to be kind of scary for him was because, remember, Malone had a quote, year to change the culture. 20-some-odd games in the year two, he was gone. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
You really don't know what's going to happen with this team, really, from year to year.
Do you think, as Jason Jones of the Beat joins us on the drive, do you think, he wouldn't say it publicly, Jason, but how do you think that Dave Yeager feels like the end of this season is gone? Is he a little bit frustrated with the trade, perhaps, or what do you think's going through his head?
No, I think he's frustrated from the fact that the team was getting better, and making the trade really set all that progress they made back. I think he talked a little bit about it the other day about how when you're trying to evaluate how the defense might have been getting better, you really can't, because what you were looking at for the first 50-plus games and what you're looking at now is so drastically different. And, you know, and the thing is, no coach coaches to lose. And, you know, you can all talk about, you know, we have a plan, we have a process, you know, trying to get a better draft. But at the end of the day, his record still has a bunch of losses on it. And if he gets fired, people are going to point to his overall record. And they're going to say, well, you do realize that Marcus got traded and, there, you know, then they lost a bunch of games. No, people are going to say, hey, look at your record. You didn't win. You're gone. So that's a tough part on him. But the one thing he has done with this group, he hasn't stopped coaching them hard. He has not, you know, gone out there and just said, hey, we're not going to try to win all together, you know. But it's been frustrating for them, for everyone, just because, you know, when you have a team that's missed the playoffs for 10 straight years and you look like you got a chance to break that, you know, you want to do that, and people will say, "Well, that, you know, they weren't even going to be above 500." My thing is, you got to take baby steps.
Yeah,
you can't go from the lottery every year to being mad that you didn't win 50 games. You know, you can't say, "Well, we're only the eighth spot." Guess what? For 10 years, you weren't even in. So
I know it doesn't get much worse than it was.
Yeah, I don't understand the logic of, well, we weren't going to win anything this year or next year. Duh, you weren't going to win anything, but. So, and that's kind of where their frustration is, too. It's like, well, what did you expect? I mean, you got a bunch of, you know, especially even with DeMarcus, he had never won before in the NBA. And he was finally getting an idea of what it was like to have a little stability. So those guys are going to go into next season pretty much feeling like, hey, this is year one, part two.
Oh, the perpetual joy of the Sacramento Kings. Jason Jones, that poor guy has to do it professionally. We're stuck doing it for fun somehow. Jason.
Hey, I managed to have my fun with it. I got spring training out of it this season, so I got 2 days of spring training, so I can't complain too much.
Hey, that's always a win, man. Jason, have fun in New Orleans. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
No problem. Anytime. Talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you soon. Jason Jones of the B. Well, you could have done that. We'd have been just fine. 825, time to call AMC for your HOA management needs, association management concepts, the homeowner association company. We have 1 hour left in the show. Thanks to Jason and Justin Kutcher, our guest today. We'll return, and you like goal calls? I know you've heard long goal calls in Spanish and soccer, but this one takes the cake, puts them all to shame. Stay tuned for that on The Drive, Sports 1140. 8:35 on The Drive, time to call AMC for your HOA management needs, association management concepts, the homeowner association company. Got some great audio for you here from it's a Spanish soccer call of an American thing. We're going to get to that in just a second. I mean, you've heard long goal calls. This puts all of them to shame. But real quick, just as we kind of come off the tail end of that Jason Jones interview, as usual, mixed reviews on the text line. Whenever you bring up DeMarcus Cousins, we mentioned it. There's two camps on this. And, you know, the first one right out of the gate, and if you want to jump in at 44-11-40, says, Nate, stop being fake and acting like you weren't for the trade. Well, guess what? I'm not fake. You're fake. So, in your face.
Got him.
Neener, neener. No, but, okay, honestly, though, I wasn't faking anything. I mean, here's the deal. I'm here every day from 6 to 9 offering my opinions. And it's clear, based on your text, that you know where I stand and what my opinion is. When I have Jason Jones on to interview him, I don't interview him so that I can give him my opinion. I interview him to get his opinion. That's where I was trying to go with. You know where I stand. That is, I'm not going to say it's not going to change, but it's not likely to change anytime soon. But, you know, this isn't, you know, hot take canon. This isn't pardon my take or whatever the heck, you know, all takes matter, whatever the heck they call one of those stupid shows. This is not have a guest on and see who can outshout who. By the way, I have no interest in doing that to Jason Jones. He's a nice guy. I respect his work. So, you know, it goes both ways. The Kings are taking on the Pelicans tonight. 5 o'clock tip-off from New Orleans. You can hear it all on KHTK. Agree or disagree? I mean, Jason's embedded with the team, man.
And Jason knows what he's talking about, and he always has, and he is right there, and he's one of the few that travel with the team almost everywhere they go, so he's always been around it. So he'll definitely know better than anyone else, and I always respect his opinion. I know you do, and all the fans do as well. However, him talking about how he feels that DeMarcus was getting better in terms of the on-court issues with just silly fouls or maybe trying to take the ball all the way up the court or reaching fouls when he gets beat on the defensive end, things that he's done for 6 years of his career that haven't looked to get any better, and him saying that he expects them to
right.
get better.
I didn't see that changing. But again, I'm on the phone. I'm talking with this guy for 20 minutes. I like Jason. I'm not going to shout at him, have an argument with him. That's why it gets out there, so you and I can respond to it later, the people on the text line. I mean, yeah, I didn't see that, but I'm also not embedded with the team. I've never said one word to DeMarcus Cousins personally. I don't know.
Well, and I can absolutely understand what he's saying by the locker room, because it was a tight-knit bunch, and I think that was probably the best locker room that maybe Cousins has had in his entire career.
Right.
But you look at just the stuff that he's continued to do on the floor time and time again, and you look at that for 6 years and you think, what reason do I have, if any, to believe that any of that is going to change? I expected the off-court stuff to change because that's stuff you work on with maturity. But after seeing a player do the same thing for 6 years, it's pretty safe to say you know what he's going to be doing for the final 6 or plus years of his career.
Well, here's the cool part. It's not our problem anymore. It's New Orleans' problem. They can deal with it. On to soccer. I've got it right here too, Matt, by the way. U.S. national team, they've got this kid. He's the best teenager in America. I don't know if you know it. And I don't mean just soccer. I mean, period. Christian Pulisic. This guy is 18 years old. And if you haven't heard of him, I mean, he is the biggest. Maybe you don't care about soccer. There's a good chance you don't. But Christian Pulisic is a name you're going to hear for a long, long time. He's 18 years old. He's already tearing it up for one of the biggest clubs in Europe, Borussia Dortmund. And he's played pretty well for the U.S. national team over this international break here. They had a game the other night against Panama after they beat Honduras like 5-0, and I think he had a part in 4 out of their 5 goals. Again, he's 18 years old. He assisted a goal to Clint Dempsey, and we love Spanish soccer calls. And this had to have been a Spanish call for the American side because you'll hear the excitement. And you know, sometimes they tend to draw out the goal and like make it long. This is just give this a listen. We there? Oh, do you got another one? That was 20 seconds. What do you got? Oh, there we go. At this point, I'm coughing and gagging, by the way. Oh! Ow! Yeah! 23 seconds on this second one. I love it. Yeah, I love the uptick at the end. Give us that one more time. Come on.
That's when a blood vessel in his head just popped.
Dude, I can't listen. I was holding my breath listening to that. Because I was trying 20 seconds on the first one, 22 on the last one. Very impressive. And it's all because of the greatest American teenager, Christian Pulisic. He's good. Man, I can't get enough of the... Ugh. The United States would give up a dumb equalizing goal and then go on to draw that game. But still, hooray, soccer. Who's excited about it? Champions League is coming up. Dortmund's taking on Monaco. You can witness. In case you're a little more curious about this guy, a lot of his matches with Dortmund make it on to Fox Sports 1, home of our good friend Justin Kutcher, who joined us at 7:35. So there's your full circle. You can get a load of him just about every weekend. Okay, we got one more segment left. I am Nate Goodyear, and Dave and Katie are not. They're also not here. Rebrew on the way when we return on Sports 1140. Rebrew brought to you by McDonald's. Enjoy the new McCafe macchiatos, cappuccinos, or Americanos at McDonald's. Price and participation may vary for a limited time. I'm loving it. Thanks to Justin Kutcher and Jason Jones, our guests for today, and Matt George, of course, across the glass on the other side of the board. It's just been me and him today. So we thank you for joining us on a Friday. So, Rebrew, when we started the show, Brock Stassi, Yuba City product, him and his brother Max Stassi come from a big baseball family you've probably heard of in the area. Brock finally got the call up. He finally got the call up, man. He's going to be on the opening day roster for the Phillies, and he was very emotional about it. It was pretty cool. Yeah, so our biggest congratulations. I mean, you hear that. A guy realizing his lifelong dream after 6 years in the minors. And he's right from this area, guys. So big congratulations to not just Brock Stassi, but the entire Stassi family. A 33rd round selection in the 2011 draft, and he's getting the call, man. So big ups to them. On to the rest of the Rebrew. Take you back to a while ago, and this audio kind of speaks for itself, but many, many moons ago when I was a young radio pup, I had myself an interesting experience during an interview. We got a baseball expert. He liked Florida last year. That was like 4 years ago now. Hey, John Heyman's a sport. I've never talked to John Rothstein, actually. I don't think I ever got the chance to talk to John Rothstein, actually. But hey, that's my life, the somehow still employed Nate Goodyear.
At least Heyman will always remember you.
I would say so. There are certain people. John Heyman will probably always remember me. Ken Rosenthal, I held his umbrella once. He'll probably always remember me. I fixed his bow tie, and I think I got a little bit too, detailed with it, because I remember right before he went on air, and I'm talking about Rosenthal here, he goes, hey, is my tie okay? I mean, it probably was, but it was a little off kilter, so I reach over, and I'm like fiddling with it, and finally he's just like, oh, okay, man, all right, it's probably good. So on to the final. We had a little would you rather today. If you were, well, just listen. The question was, if you're essentially stuck in hell for the rest of your life, and the only song you can hear ever, whenever music is played, everyone else can hear a song, but if you're listening to the radio, if the rest of the world hears what's a popular musical act right now, Britney Spears, if the rest of the world is hearing a Britney Spears song...
Did you just say Britney Spears is popular right now?
If the radio is playing a Britney Spears song, all you can hear is one of these two songs, either the Hey song, Rock and Roll Part 2 by Gary Glitter, or Bang the Drum All Day by Todd Rundgren. That was the debate. Would you rather? I think we both ended up landing on the Hey song. Me, because I know I'll never have to worry about remembering the words. So that's your big poll question for the day, guys. 339-1140-800-920-1140. Now would be a good time, too, to call us if you want to win a pair of tickets to All Access. That's happening tonight at Tower Bridge Gateway Lot in West Sacramento. 339-1140-800-920-1140. More info at KHTK.com. All right, tying things up here, there's kind of one last note that we didn't get to. I mean, we've talked about Scott McKibben of the Raiders Stadium Authority, at least at some level here. I mean, he wants the Raiders gone right now. San Antonio has come up. Santa Clara has come up. Matt, I'm going to use this last couple of minutes here to ask you as a Raiders fan, even if they don't play out the final 3 years in Oakland, you already know that they're going to Las Vegas. I guess, do you have a preference either way? If you had to choose between scab years in Santa Clara or San Antonio, what do you think is more palatable to the Raiders fan?
Between San Antonio and Santa Clara?
Yeah.
Probably San Antonio, because they're as far away as possible. I mean, I've gone back and forth about if they don't stay in Oakland, do I want them to stay in Oakland for these final 2 or 3 years, or maybe one and done? And I keep going back and forth, but I'm more leaning towards the side of one and done now, just because of, I think the city of Oakland is handling it really, really well. Mm-hmm. I read something on Twitter this morning about whoever's in charge of the Coliseum, or the Coliseum itself, is trying to find a loophole to force the Raiders out after this one season so they don't have to exercise their option. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question specifically, I think San Antonio, just because two reasons. One, it's as far away from as possible, so you can kind of move on.
Yeah, start
and
that
two
process.
Is if there's anything that the Raiders fans hate right now more than Mark Davis and the Raiders leaving, it's that the San Francisco 49ers are still here, and that's all that we're hearing from are these Niners fans. So sharing a stadium with them would be a travesty.
I would say that if there is one thing that we as Raiders fans and 49ers fans can find common ground on, it's our hatred of the San Francisco 49ers, and specifically Jed York. I think we're all kind of in the same boat on that one.
Neither side is too happy with ownership at the moment, so we should just band together and become our own one big angry mob.
I'll tell you what I want to see, though, and here's why I want Oakland to only, or the Raiders to only stay in Oakland for one more year. I'm a sucker for that narrative of the last stand of the city. So if you bring back Marshawn Lynch to make one last run at a title for the city of Oakland, the fans know that that's all they've got. I would love following that story all year long, because they obviously have a legitimate chance of doing some serious things.
Well,
so.
And even just to force the NFL to have to have a
to
playoff
have to eat
game
crap publicly.
No,
yes.
To have a playoff game in Oakland where the Oakland supporters are just going to show up and not be silent. I mean, they're going to destroy that telecast with as many signs as they possibly could. So that would be phenomenal.
That's it. Thanks for Jason Jones and Justin Kutcher. Kings basketball tonight at 5 o'clock. Enjoy your programming day. Jim Rome is next. This is The Drive on Sports 1140.